Good morning and welcome to another episode of Community Matters. I'm here joined with State Assemblyman John Salka, who represents District 121, which covers Madison County, parts of Oneida, and Otsego County. Did I leave anywhere out?
No, that's it. All of Madison. We think we have five towns up in Oneida County and 11 towns in Otsego County.
That's quite a few towns.
35 in total. So, yeah, it's a lot of area to cover.
Yeah. Do you get to spend some time in every place?
I have been every place.
No kidding.
Yeah, multiple times. So, as I mentioned earlier, I'll be heading down to Oneonta after this. We're having a luncheon with the college president of SUNY Oneonta. Wonderful lady.
Yeah.
Climbed Mount Kilimanjaro last month.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, she's got some interesting stories.
It's like a nice place. My mom worked at SUNY Oneonta for 23 years. Years in the library.
It's a great school.
Last year.
Another one of the great schools in the 121st district.
That's right. That's right. Well, if you could, as an assemblyman, just give us a quick primer for those who are listening and maybe not familiar. What exactly is the assembly and how does it affect people at the local level?
Oh, it affects people at the local level. It affects people on the statewide level. Now, there's 150 members in the New York State Assembly, and the New York State Senate has 62 members, I believe. And, of course, then you have the executive branch. And we just started session this week. There are a number of issues that we are going to address of high priority, in particular the bail reform and discovery reform bill that was passed last session is running into a lot of opposition from law enforcement, from the judiciary. I have a lot of judges reaching out to me, very, very concerned about the fact that you can now commit a number of offenses and just be let out with an appearance ticket. Multiple stories since the first of the year when it took effect of repeat offenders, people getting out of jail or actually not even going to jail, but to be given an appearance ticket for a number of very, very serious offenses. One aggravated vehicular manslaughter, homicide.
Wow.
You're going to get an appearance ticket. The scale of these crimes is not anything that I would be putting someone back out on the street. And now we're getting multiple stories of people that are being let out, and burglary is another one, and recommitting basically the same offense. So there's a lot of implications for this bill. We're hoping that there will be some kind of reform addressed on the bill, but at this point right now, the leadership in both the Senate and the assembly are not considering much of any kind of changes. So, you know, we'll have to see where this goes.
So when you have opposition to a bill like this and you want reform, how is it that you go about arguing for its reform?
Well, I mean, we argue a bill on a number of reasonings. One, constitutional. Another is whether or not there are unintended consequences to the bill. Something that we don't foresee or they don't foresee happening because the bill being passed. Mm. We were very concerned when the Farm Bill passed that requires farmers to pay anything over 60 hours. They have to pay overtime now. Well, I got a message from a farmer in Madison County. He said his overtime bill is now over $2,000 a week.
Wow.
And no matter what the scale of your operation, that's a lot of money to try to absorb.
Sure.
Especially with a market that's so soft as the dairy market.
Now, speaking of agriculture, you recently did a tour of farms in upstate New York. Tell us about that experience. What was your objective in making that tour?
Well, it was a tour that was proposed. It was conducted, organized by Assemblyman Chris Tagg, who's down in Schoharie County. Wonderful time. I should mention, I do regular tours of farms. I mean, I have a farming district, so I spend a lot of time visiting with farmers. And this one in particular was a group of legislators, and it was encouraging that there were some downstate legislators that were very, very interested in doing the tour and being able to see what upstate farmers are going through, what they need to do. And I think it drove home a lot of points to those downstate legislators that farming's a tough business. It's a lot of work, and we need to give those farmers every opportunity we can to survive.
Do you find that there's a lack of understanding with downstate legislators with what upstate New Yorkers are dealing with, particularly maybe agriculture?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I make this point. When I go around my district, like for instance, when I go to Oneonta in a little while, I'll probably see 25 farms or more.
Wow.
Unfortunately, some of those farms are no longer in operation, but fortunately enough, a lot of them are, for now at least. When they're going to work or to their office in Brooklyn or Queens or Manhattan or some other place down in the metropolitan area, they're not seeing any farms. So it really, the point isn't driven home that these are viable businesses that are struggling to survive. They're big landowners, they're big taxpayers. And I can understand where if you're not exposed to it, I mean, I'm not exposed to the problems with the MTA. So sometimes it's hard for me to understand why we have to spend billions and billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to improve the MTA, the Metropolitan Transit Authority. Right. But again, that isn't my high priority. I don't take the subway to work. But I do drive by farms, and I was encouraged to know that so many downstate legislators did show up. And hopefully that's going to set up a dialogue so that when we do debate issues to do with agriculture, they're going to have a little bit more of a firsthand knowledge of what goes on in upstate New York.
Well, that makes perfect sense. And yeah. Would you say that a large part of what you do then is sort of educating other legislatures in the state of what the people in your district are facing?
Yeah, and you know, you can apply that to one of our big issues is healthcare. I spent 32 years in the healthcare profession as a registered respiratory therapist, 16 years of it as a manager. And if you look at the lay of the land, if you will, in the New York State Assembly, all due respect, most of them are lawyers. And for them to understand the intricacies of healthcare, not only from the business side, but from the clinical side, is tough. So I think there's only about five or six of us in the entire group that have any kind of experience in healthcare. So when a major issue like single-payer healthcare is going to be debated this session, I hope to be right on the forefront of that debate to let them know that how those proposals, how those changes are going to affect people's care, how it's going to affect the way that hospitals operate, nursing homes operate. Because, again, I have a firsthand knowledge of that. And this is what I hope to be able to relay to them is be careful on some of these changes that you're proposing because it could very well affect in a negative way a lot of the people that I've had an experience with for a long, long time.
Do you mind sharing with us a little bit about what those changes are that they're proposing and how they're going to affect us?
Well, you know, obviously healthcare could be a long discussion. We could probably spend the rest of the day here talking about it. But essentially what we're looking at this year is we're looking at a $4 billion deficit in Medicaid. That's an astronomical deficit. And what we're going to consider is where we can obviously make up for that deficit. My concern is that there's 6 million people in New York State that depend on Medicaid in one way or another. It's a huge agency that encompasses the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities and nursing homes and payments to hospitals and providers. And one of the things that I want to make sure is the state doesn't do a slash and burn approach toward the cuts that are needed for Medicaid and looks at it as a more surgical measure is how can we make cuts, how can we make things more efficiently without hurting people that depend on these programs. And I'm kind of hoping to give my perspective, working with people in the disabilities communities, on what they're going to need to do, and hopefully the cuts don't hurt them. That's my big concern.
What can they do?
You know something? I'm not exactly sure at this point what we can do to make up for a $4 billion deficit.
That's a lot.
There's a number of options, all right? You can cut programs, which is going to be not only politically unpopular, but it's going to hurt people. All right. You can raise taxes and fees on the state level, which, again, now puts the onus of responsibility on people like the governor. The governor's not comfortable with raising taxes, and I can understand that. Or he's also hinted now at requiring the counties to put in a greater share of their budgets to Medicaid. There's a 3% cap on what the counties pay into Medicaid right now, and the state takes care of the rest. Well, I don't think we're going to be able to continue that. And what that invariably does is it goes down to the local taxpayer. And that's what I'm very, very concerned about is the local taxpayer is going to bear the brunt of what I think are a lot of instances of mismanagement. Last year, the governor was supposed to pay $1.7 billion in the 2019 budget to Medicaid. He kicked the can down the road so that he could say he had a balanced budget. And now that $1.7 billion in the 2020 budget, but for a number of complicated reasons, is now $4 billion. These are budget deficits that we haven't seen since 2008. And in 2008, at least we had the recession to blame. I got to give the governor credit. He did a great job on Medicaid from about 2010 to about 2016. And for a number of reasons, again, long drawn out discussion on that, but we started kind of losing momentum. And since then, we've been losing big time on it. And now we're looking at a $4 billion Medicaid deficit and a $2.1 billion operational deficit. So we're looking at a combined deficit going into this budget season of over $6 billion, and it could go higher. How are we going to pay that? I'm not exactly sure, but it's got to come from somewhere, and it just simply can't come from the taxpayers. They're taxed out. The people in my district are taxed out. The people in upstate New York are taxed out. And you can't always depend on taxing the millionaires to be able to make up for that, because you know what? Millionaires just simply leave the state then. So we've got to put our heads together as a group of elected officials working closely with the governor's office to come up with some solutions. And hopefully we'll have some suggestions, tangible suggestions, that we can consider within the next couple weeks.
The session's happening right this week, correct?
Yep.
And is this something that's been brought up? I know you talked about bail reform, but is this healthcare crisis sort of what?
I have actually made it a bit of a crusade of mine. I use a lot of social media. I have thousands of friends on my social media sites, and I've been using that as a platform to give people information. And it's kind of disappointing how little people know about what's really going on. And that is probably one of the most important jobs I have, is to let people know, kind of like how the sausage is made, as they say. And sometimes it's not pretty. It's not pretty. So we got a lot of work to do. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to be back in session. I'm excited to face the challenges that we need to face to get things done for the people of my district and of New York State.
So when you're in session, you're in the minority party when you're in the assembly.
But the minority party represents 5.5 million people in New York State.
So, which is amazing, right?
It's amazing. You know, and those 5.5 million people deserve to be heard. And the minority is a very good vehicle, if you will, for making sure those people are heard.
So how do you, I guess my question is, in the minority party, how do you make sure that those 5 million people have their voice and get their say when you're in the minority?
Well, you know, that's very, very difficult, because the New York State Legislature can be a very partisan environment. What we have attempted to do is to make sure that we all come to an agreement that we have our districts to represent. We all have our priorities. But there's a lot of common ground. Believe it or not, there's a lot of camaraderie. There's a lot of good blood in the New York State Legislature, where we're allowed to have a good open dialogue on what we think the people in our district need, what we think the people in the majority's districts needs. And you know, we've had some good dialogue, but I have to admit, you know, invariably it ends up being their call. I think public information and public knowledge helps us pressure both sides to be able to do the right thing.
I appreciate what you said there about how there's listeners on both sides, because I feel like, and maybe correct me if you feel differently, I feel like politics now, the climate that we're in, it seems more partisan than ever. So hearing from you that our government representatives are talking and are working together and coming to resolutions together is actually encouraging.
It is, and it's encouraging. I mean, you know, yesterday on the floor of the assembly, well, the actual opening day was Wednesday, we really had a great time. Hadn't seen some of these people since session ended. Had some great conversations. There were some hugs and just, you know, welcome back type of thing, and let's work together. All right, we have a new leader in the minority, Assemblyman Barkley from up in Oswego area, a great guy, going to be a great leader. I'm looking forward to working with him. And so we work hard to make sure that our points are driven home about the number of people we represent. And again, now that the Senate and the Assembly and the governor all belong to one party, we're very concerned that there's going to be a lack of balance. So if it means that we've got to work a little bit harder or a lot harder to make our point and to represent our constituents, we're all willing to do it. We've got a great Republican conference. They're enthused about what they're doing. They're dedicated. And I think that we're going to be able to get some things done.
That's good.
Yeah.
The last time we spoke, you talked about trying to make the legislation process more transparent. Do you feel that over the course of the last year that you've been able to accomplish that?
Yeah, I do. And again, I use social media as a platform. We held a dozen town hall meetings in the district. We hope to hold even more in 2020. I did a lot of face-to-face conversation, traveled throughout extensively throughout the district every chance I had, made sure that I was in the rural areas, made sure that I was in Oneonta and Oneida and Canastota. Very proud of the accomplishment of getting the saving the traffic light in Canastota.
Yeah.
That we worked very hard and great cooperation from the Department of Transportation. Great people to work with. But of course, you know, they've got their rules and regulations. But we were able to reach common ground and we agreed that the light should stay. And it was a great success for us. And you wouldn't think of just a traffic light, but it meant a lot to the people in the community and it meant a lot to us.
Yeah, there was a lot of people talking about that.
There were. And we're very proud of it. We've got other issues like that going on throughout the district. The Oneonta School District, as a matter of fact, like every other school district, is having some financial difficulties. It's tough for them to balance their budget. We got a $50,000 grant for them just to be able to help out with some of their programs, like their lunch, backpack program, where they send kids home with food. Oneonta, unfortunately, has a high poverty rate, so you see that in the schools in particular.
Right.
So we were able to get them a pretty good chunk of money so that they can help with that program. We were up in Vernon, which is up in Oneida County. We're helping getting funding for a engineering study to be done on a water project that's needed up there. And little things and big things really make a lot of difference of what we do at home. Someone comes into our office and they need something faxed. We'll fax it for them. An older gentleman came in one day and he's having trouble with his STAR exemption. He didn't realize he had to sign back up after he reached a certain age. We made sure we took care of that for him. Now he's all set. I mean, these are little things that come in, people come in and they've got needs. We love to be able to help them out.
And this is what's amazing is that at the local level, that's to me, that's where government really has the most effect on people. But people tend to gravitate more toward national politics because it's in the news. It's in the media.
Well, it's sexier.
It's sexier. Yeah,
it's sexier. You know, I mean, when someone comes in and they want to talk. I mean, look, New York State budget was about around $175 billion in 2019. Those are almost incomprehensible numbers. I went from a town supervisor in the town of Brookfield of about a $1.3 million budget and a community of 2,400 people to now a district of over 140,000 and $175 billion budget. I mean, the scale of things is incredible.
Right.
But also in that respect, we need to keep it simple, if you will, to let people digest and understand where their tax money is going. I love the face-to-face conversation. I love, after my luncheon today, I'll be visiting businesses in the Oneonta area just to stop in and say, hey, remember me? I'm your assemblyman. Here's my contact information. If you got any kind of issue with your business, you know, the tax department or anything like that, give me a call.
Do people take you up on that?
Oh, they do. We have a very busy office. We get hundreds of emails and my staff, which is small, it's a small staff. I only have two full-timers and a part-timer and myself that works triple time. But we are focused on constituent services. Every staff meeting that we have on a regular basis, we make sure that we go over all our constituents that have contacted us to make sure that what they needed from us was taken care of or we were in the process of taking care of that.
The last time you were here, you gave out your cell phone number over the air.
Yeah. 315-941-9207. If someone has any problem or, you know, we would prefer that you call the office only because there's a process that we work through.
Right.
I got to admit, if someone calls me on my cell phone and I'm in my car and I can't write it down, I get real nervous about being able to remember it.
Sure.
But I have a style about me and our office has a style about us where we know exactly why we're there. We're there to serve the constituents of the 121st District, and we're always working hard, 7 days a week if need be, to make sure that gets done.
So how much of your time would you say is divided then among state issues, statewide issues, and issues that affect just the people in your district?
You know, that's an interesting question. If you wanted to put a percentage, obviously we're in session. This year we'll be in session for 5 months instead of 6 months. They shorten the session schedule because of the primaries that are in June now. But I'd say that I spend a greater percentage of my time in district taking care of constituents' needs. The legislative end is very, very important. We have a number of bills that we're going to be introducing. One in particular that we're discussing is to require the New York State Legislature to go paperless by 2022. The reams of paper that are generated, as you can imagine, in a legislative body are incredible. So we're going to put a bill forward that would require our complicated issue, no doubt about it, but we all carry laptops and cell phones now. There's no reason why we can't start to decrease the amount of paper and the environmental impact that that paper has, all right, and be able to consider using our computers more, which everybody's used to using now. So, I mean, these are the kind of things we're actively pursuing legislation on don't have a huge impact in the short run. But in the long run, I probably got a stack of paperwork that's 8 or 10 inches high just in 2 days.
Wow.
Just in 2 days.
Wow.
So if we can even drop that by 25% or 30% within the next several years, that's going to be an accomplishment. And not to mention the fact how much money it's going to save too.
Well, and speaking of environmental issues, the plastic bag ban goes into effect in March. What are your thoughts and feelings about all that?
Well, you know, the plastic ban, bag ban and concept, again, these laws – there's an old saying, right church, wrong pew. The intent is there, but you're in the wrong spot. I got a million of them. But there were so many holes that were incorporated into and so many contingencies that were incorporated into the bag ban. I voted against it because it really doesn't acquire the intent that it had. I mean, I hate plastic bags. No doubt about it. My wife has been using reusable bags now for years. And so, I mean, we're kind of used to it, and I think we should make that easier. Madison County had a proposal, as a matter of fact, to distribute reusable bags. Great proposal. But when we design these bills, when we write these bills and we pass them, sometimes there's so many holes in them that the true intent of the bill wasn't even maintained.
Right.
So, and that's the way I saw it with the plastic bag. It passed. It passed, and I'm hoping it's successful. We're going to push it in our office, you know, to try to help people comply with it.
And you said Madison County has this proposal to help people out.
Yeah, just about every county has come up with some kind of proposal to be able to help people out with it. You know, we'll see. We'll see how things pan out, you know, over the next several months or year. And if it needs to be tweaked, there is where our job is to be able to see where the issues are with these bills and to offer what we call a chapter amendment, which would change the bill a little bit and to be able to make it a better bill.
Right, very good. Now, getting a little closer to home, last fall you hosted a drug take-back day in Oneida, right near your office.
Yeah.
Does your involvement in that stem from your 30-plus years in healthcare, or...?
That's part of it. Also recognizing from an environmental standpoint that medications really should be disposed of properly. We did a drug take back in Oneonta too, and they collected twice of what they usually collect, over 50 pounds of medications. We were able to collect. They were disposed of properly. They didn't go back into the environment. Law enforcement, we worked with law enforcement to make sure that they were disposed of, like I said, properly. So very great success. We plan on more. We also plan on, this is more to do with my healthcare background, this spring we're going to be doing a health fair in the Oneida area. We're going to talk to different vendors, different providers. When I was a respiratory therapist, I used to do a lot of health fairs doing pulmonary function testing. Great way to be able to instruct the public on how to live better lifestyles too. So we're working on that. We're hoping to do a blood drive. Hoping to do a blood drive in the Oneida area, working with the American Red Cross on that. These things take time. But, you know, our accent is healthcare, and we want to make sure that people are well provided for.
And just for a second to go back to what you were saying, when you say disposed of properly, you're talking about incinerated versus thrown away or flushed down the toilet or something like
right.
that.
Right. I guess the process is that the law enforcement is there with us. We had sheriff's deputies with us to make sure that, you know, they went in the right container and all that, and nobody tampered with them. And then they're given to, I believe, either the state police, the DEA, or they have a process that they go through where it's closely monitored, and from the time it's collected right up into the time I believe they incinerate it, but
Whatever that process
is. Whatever that process is,
right.
Yeah. It went over very well.
So just a couple more questions here for you. I know you've got to run, and we really appreciate you spending time with us this morning.
Yeah.
What is it that you hope to accomplish over the course of the next year? You're at the end of your first term here. Well, I mean, starting, right, that second year, what is it that you hope to accomplish?
Well, we hope to accomplish the same direction that we're going in right now, and that's to keep the people in my district informed, to take care of my constituent needs, to be able to have an input in Albany, in our state capital, that gives my area of expertise some guidance to the legislature on writing bills that have to do with health care, that have to do with agriculture. I am running again. I love the job. I think we're doing a good job. Especially, I passed four bills. That's supposed to be pretty good for a newbie in my first year. So we are staying focused on doing the job. The campaign will start when it starts. Right now, we're in legislature. We're in the session. This is what I'm focused on. And there'll be plenty of time to campaign. And it's what I love to do anyway. I've worn out a number of soles on my shoes going door to door from Oneonta to Oneida to Canastota to Cheryl. Just wonderful thing to be able to do is it's an honor to be able to be invited into people's homes and talk about issues that are relevant to them and their families and their lives.
And I think that's why people love you so much, because you're visible. They see you.
Well, you know, if you see the guy with the big nose and the mustache coming down the street, you know who it is.
With the worn-out soles.
With the worn-out soles. And I got to admit, it's getting harder and harder to find somebody to replace those soles.
Yeah.
So, I love the job. You know, I spent 32 years, actually, in the medical profession, taking care of people's needs. And there's a lot of gratification at the end of the day when you can say I accomplished either something small or even something big to be able to take care of why we're there and why the people trust us to be able to go to Albany or go wherever to represent them. I love the job.
Very good. Final question for you. What do you think we can do as citizens in Madison County, in the Oneida area? What can we do to make upstate New York a better place?
That's a great question. I'm seeing all this contentious environment going on right now, and all the partisanship and all that. One good spin on it is that people are becoming more and more aware of what's going on around them and their government. And we're working very, very hard, again, through our social media platform, through our town hall meetings, to get people informed so that they can make a choice, not only when they go to the voting booth, but they can make a choice on who they want to continue to work with to make their communities a better place. So there's an increased awareness. Obviously, we have a very interesting presidential election that's going to be held this year. There's a lot of issues that are being discussed. I would like to see our Congress in Washington doing a little bit more as far as focusing on the job, why they're there, instead of this impeachment stuff. I look at it this way. I really don't have a lot of effect on what's going on in Washington, D.C., but I sure do have a lot of effect on what's going on in our state capital and in the 121st District, and that's where I focused 99% of my energies.
Very good. Assemblyman Salko, thank you so much for being
here with
us this morning.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Safe travels, and we hope to see you again.
Anytime.
Very good.
Thank you.